On this episode of Skeptico,
most of the world is living in a consensus reality that doesn't allow for this. How do you balance that both on a day-to-day basis now, and how did you deal with it for that long period of time when you really weren't telling anyone that this is what was going on?
Yeah, I think the first thing is, of course, we are totally focused on the physical reality. Nearly everybody is. And when it comes to our dreams, we hardly pay any attention and we just dismiss them as dreams. But the moment you become aware in your dreams, which is usually happens during lucid dreams, things start changing dramatically.
Stay with us for Skeptico.
Welcome to Skeptica, where we explore controversial science with leading researchers, thinkers, and their critics. I'm your host, Alex Sakaris, and on this episode, we return to a topic that I don't think gets enough serious scientific attention, and that is lucid dreaming. And in particular, the potential for lucid dreaming to actually propel us into other realms of consciousness. That is certainly the assertion of today's guest, Jürgen Ziva, a guest who was introduced to me by you, Skeptico listeners, in this case Steve, who suggested I talk to Jürgen, and it was a great suggestion. And in the process of doing the interview with Jürgen, I did get back in touch with my own limited experience with lucid dreaming, and I've talked about it a couple times on the show in various interviews, but you know, I never even knew what lucid dreaming was until my oldest son began sharing his dreams with me, his dream stories in the morning, and he'd talk about these wild adventures that he had orchestrated. He insisted that, you know, he was in the center of these and making them happen and he could do whatever he wanted and all this stuff. And initially I just kind of passed it off as fantasy. I didn't think it was possible. And it was through Skeptico and doing various interviews on this show that I learned that there is really such a phenomena as lucid dreaming. And it's been studied quite extensively in the laboratory as well as they can. And there's even practitioners who will put you up at the Marriott for the weekend and teach you lucid dreaming in a seminar format. So now people who research dreams have come around to the reality of lucid dreaming. It's the sense that while you're in your dream, you're aware that you're dreaming and therefore have the sense of control. In my case, I can tell you the first lucid dream I had was not that amazing, but then it was amazing because it was my lucid dream. But I remember it pretty clearly. I was observing this football game, but it was a really strange football game played on a weird field and everything seemed kind of out of proportion. And suddenly the thought crossed my mind, hey, this isn't real. This must be a dream, because I had been researching lucid dreaming, which, by the way, is one of the key triggers. If you want to begin lucid dreaming, first step is to observe your dream. But the second step, or maybe it's the first step, I don't know, is to be aware that it's possible to become aware that you're dreaming in a lucid dream. So it turns out that just the awareness of this can often trigger lucid dreaming for a lot of people. And that was somewhat the case for me. Anyways, back to this dream. I had this thought, it crossed my mind, hey, this must be a dream. And with that, I did what a lot of lucid dreamers will tell you is one of the first things they do. I said, I'm in a dream. I should be able to do whatever I want. I'm going to take flight. And I just jumped with the idea that I'm going to fly. And lo and behold, I flew. I was off in the air and I was flying and I was above everything. It was really cool. It really felt like flying. So since then, I've had a bunch of lucid dreams. They don't happen all the time. They seem to happen more often during these hypnagogic states, like when you wake up early in the morning and then you fall back asleep, or when you first fall asleep at night. Those are classically the times when people have lucid dreams, and that seems to be the case for me. But the reason I bring all this up is for two reasons. First, I don't think lucid dreaming is talked about enough as really being a stark departure from our ordinary understanding of consciousness. And it is, because lucid dreaming makes it clear experientially to us that we are in the observer mode of reality. We are observing this reality that's unfolding. And of course, as you know, it doesn't bode well with our current model of consciousness. But the other thing that's particularly interesting about lucid dreaming is how it is often a gateway to more extensive travels into these extended consciousness realms. Many people will tell you that they started out lucid dreaming and then they moved on to out-of-body travel and these other dimensions of consciousness. That is certainly the account of today's guest, Jürgen Ziva, who's compiled the largest database that I know of these accounts of lucid dreaming as a mode of travel into these extended consciousness realms. Now, his accounts are quite challenging. They're really outside the norm of what we experience and what we understand reality to be. But isn't that what makes it fun in the first place? What I tried to do in this interview was connect some of Jürgen's thoughts, experiences, and ideas with some of the other guests you've heard on Skeptico. You can be the judge of whether or not those connections are there and whether they provide us any further insight into what's going on. All in all, it was a really interesting dialogue from a very sincere and dedicated explorer of extended consciousness. I hope you enjoy this dialogue with Jürgen Ziva. Today we welcome Jürgen Ziva to Skeptico. Jürgen had a very successful career as an artist and illustrator, but is probably much better known as a longtime out-of-body experiencer who compiled a 40-year journal in private of his experiences in this extended consciousness realm before publishing Multidimensional Man. He's gone on to publish several books since then. This is an amazing body of work from a very interesting gentleman who I'm so glad that a Skeptico listener insisted that we bring on the show, and I'm very happy to welcome you to Skeptico, Jürgen.
Hello, Alex. Nice to talk to you.
Well, it's very great to talk to you, too. So let me give folks a thumbnail sketch of your background, and then we can kind of jump off from there. I think because I have interviewed several out-of-body experiencers before, as well as a handful of people who've researched this phenomena, I think a lot of people are going to be familiar with the basic idea. But again, your case is totally unique, and yet it fits in with a pattern that we've seen before. So you're practicing meditation. You're very deeply and intently practicing it. And then suddenly you're catapulted out of your body and you experience this other realm. One thing that's very unique in your case is you kept this diary detailing these experiences for 40 years, which is really quite remarkable. And then you came back and you started sharing those experiences with other people who were understandably fascinated and gained a lot from what you had to share. You formed a little community, and that's what eventually led you to write these very interesting books. What else should we add to that background to help people understand where you're coming from?
I think that's basically it, really. But I think my meditation helped, of course, to focus attention when I had out-of-body experiences. So I was able to prolong them. And also I devised various techniques to bring back the information and retain very detailed memory, really. I think that together with recording, it all helped to get a much more comprehensive picture, because these experiences can easily get lost, you know, if you don't follow some sort of discipline.
Which is an interesting topic in and of itself. And we want to talk about in a minute the connection, or what we propose is might be the connection between memory and this extended consciousness realm. I mean, there are dozens and dozens of potential PhD theses waiting for someone to explore all these realms. One of the things I feel obligated to do right from the beginning is to acknowledge with you that what we're talking about here is just beyond what most people are even willing to consider. And even though, as I mentioned, I've interviewed several very respectable people who have had similar out-of-body experiences through various means, and we'll talk about some of those in a minute. And I've interviewed researchers who have, as best they could, try and nail down what is going on and whether we can extend beyond our brain, as your experiences suggest, and they say yes confidently. But I always feel obligated to come back and kind of remind us that most of the world is living in a consensus reality that doesn't allow for this. How do you kind of balance that, both on a day-to-day basis now, and how did you deal with it for that long period of time when you really weren't telling anyone that this is what was going on?
Yeah, I think the first thing is, of course, we are totally focused on the physical reality. Nearly everybody is. And when it comes to our dreams, we hardly pay any attention and we just dismiss them as dreams. But the moment you become aware in your dreams, which is usually happens during lucid dreams, things start changing dramatically. When you have an out-of-body experience, and which very often happens from a lucid dream, or can happen from a lucid dream, then you suddenly are in a position to take control of the experience. And also, that's what I did. I disintegrated or interrupted the dream narrative, which is a lucid dream, which is usually comes out of the, takes its content from the subconscious. And by doing so, you then, after you dismantle the dream narrative, you then find yourself in a new consensus reality, which is just as real as our physical reality. And this is where things become really interesting.
Interesting indeed. And interesting in maybe some challenging ways that we don't always explore. You know, one of the things I thought we might do in this interview, Jürgen, is you have produced some excellent YouTube videos that anyone can go and check out. You also have a terrific website and a great book, too. So I love the approach of your book. You're very open. You're very the artist in you comes out in terms of you have kind of an open-mindedness and a creativity at the same time that's really refreshing. But what I thought would be most useful to my listeners is to try and probe maybe the controversies or the disparity between these different accounts we get with this extended consciousness, including out-of-body experiences. And if that doesn't make any sense, let me give you an example of what I mean. Mm-hmm. A few months ago, I interviewed this guy. His name is Ian McCormick. And he had an incredible near-death experience during which he saw Jesus. Now, as you and I know, most people just dismiss this out of hand and say, oh, it's a hallucination. Or if they're hardcore Christians, they go, oh, it's the spirit of Jesus, you know. But what I want to do, and I shouldn't be so flippant, because I'm not sure what he experienced, right? And in my conversation with him, it was a very difficult conversation because he has totally reabsorbed his experience, which I take to be genuine. I have no reason to doubt, in the same way that I don't doubt that you've accessed this extended consciousness realm. I have no reason to doubt that Ian McCormick accessed this extended consciousness realm when he died. Because one of the reasons I don't doubt it is because I've interviewed researchers who've interviewed thousands of people who have had the exact same experience. And some of them do encounter Jesus. But the real question for you and I is, what does this tell us about this extended consciousness realm? And I'll just leave it at that, but I guess I won't leave it at that. Because my follow-up question is, you talk about you have a wonderful way of talking about the island of reality that we create from the vast sea of consciousness. But you talk about that in this realm, in our conscious waking state. Might that also be true in this extended realm too? And is that what Ian is experiencing, or what is he experiencing?
Yeah, I think what some people experience is they draw from their from their cultural background very often, you know. And for example, if you go to higher dimensional realms, you will find the dimensions are much more sublime, much more beautiful. They are stripped of the coarse physical aspects that we experience here. And you get into realms where, which I describe, you get closer to home. There's an element where you feel more and more at home, the more inside you turn your attention, the more you come to your source consciousness. And what you simultaneously experience is that the people on these realms who are separate individuals, they are also much more beautiful, are more attractive and more sublime. They have stripped all the negative aspects out of their personality, because it's the negative aspects which tie them to the lower consciousness levels. But on these higher consciousness levels, all the negative aspects have been stripped away. And when you first get to these higher levels and you encounter these people, the first thing people will think of as angels, because they have got an almost supernatural beauty and attractiveness, you know, and that is just ordinary people who you find on that level of consciousness, on that dimensional level. And I've got to add that for each level of consciousness, we can experience there is an equivalent dimensional reality, consensus reality, where people similarly minded can mix and meet together. Now, I found when going to the higher levels, the people you meet, they are almost, without exception, they're very attractive, very sublime, very beautiful, very positive people, you know. And then, of course, you get various other categories of people, as you would get on this level, who are wiser, who are more evolved, more highly developed, and so on. And these people may well come across as like an avatar or a wise person or even a god, you know, and it's quite easy to project our own cultural background into these people. But I can't really say that that is an accurate description with absolute certainty, because you know, I've only really scratched the surface, but I personally haven't actually met any religious figures, you know, except I have met, which I documented in my first book, I met a Chinese ancient sort of sage who put me through a training program in order to access these higher states of consciousness.
Well, first off, I appreciate you being so honest and open. Like I was saying before, this is what folks will find when they encounter your website and your work. You really don't. You talk very definitively about what you've explored, but at the same time, you talk about it as you being the reporter, you being the experiencer, and there's a limit to what you've experienced and reported. So I really respect that, and I think that's to be admired. It's the only way to kind of trace this territory. But let me return to the topic of Jesus, because I think it's so important to so many people, and I think it should be. You know, there's a near-death experience researcher, very well-known, a guy named Dr. Sam Parnia, and recently he made this kind of flippant remark that you'll kind of hear near-death experience researchers sometimes make, even though these people are they feel like they're on the battleground with mainstream science and saying, hey, guys, look over here. There is more. We are not biological robots. There is this extended consciousness realm. Please, please look at this data. But then at the same time, when they encounter these extraordinary accounts, like I'm talking about Ian's, they say, oh, well, that's just a cultural overlay. That's what that is. And I like how you went in that direction, but then pulled up short and said, well, I don't really know if that's a cultural overlay. And that's been my point, is we don't know about that extended realm. You know, we hear about people who go and they meet these beings, and the being says, here is my hand where I was crucified on the cross, and I am Jesus. And then we don't know what to make of that. And it really raises the larger question about your work. And that is, what can we really take out of these extended realms and bring back into our world? I always wonder and worry about that maybe we're looking through the wrong end of the telescope when we do that. And since that's the larger reality over there, when we try and jam it back into our reality, it winds up being nonsensical in a lot of different ways. What are your thoughts on that?
My explanation is that I have the strong experience and the strong feeling that when you move away from this physical reality, you get into a realm of consciousness which contains all the data which have ever been recorded, or everything that is known or unknown about the universe is like a massive, huge data bank. You know, and that's the only way I can explain it, because what happens is, for example, when you're on this realm, and you, for example, want to materialize something by an effort of will, you know, and let's say you want to have a cup of tea, you can actually manifest the cup of tea, and then you wonder, okay, how did this cup of tea come about? And what happens was, in my observation, it is actually already in existence. I just focus the data right in front of me, and then it materializes. Now, the interesting thing was when I did this experiment, which I also described in my book, Vistas of Infinity, that I materialized the teacup, but I wasn't very good at actually manifesting the tea, which tasted a bit watery. And also at the same time, I noticed that the teacup had a pattern, which I definitely didn't intend. And I imagined that the subconscious energy sort of, adds things from another part of the database. And it's a very complex, big issue. The other thing I noticed, for example, was when I observed a car, and the closer I moved to look at the car, the more detail emerged from the car until it was absolutely crystal clear. And when you open the bonnet in the car, there you will find an engine, and every detail will be in place. And that led me to believe that on this level, basically, via our focus, we simply call reality up from a database, a bit like we would on a computer, you know, when we call up data from a hard drive and we manifest it on the screen. And that's the only way I can explain it. And that explains a lot of other things which I encountered, for example, and that could well explain how we add detail to people who are separate individuals, but way, way beyond our sort of spiritual or status, you know, that we may then call up past images in order to furnish these encounters and match them with our own experience. But I don't know. I mean, the other thing I found, for example, is that these are things which have also been reported in near-death experience, that there's a big reception committee. And I had the same experience. I get to a higher level of consciousness, and suddenly there's a choir of 1,000 angels. You know, I thought, hang on a minute, that's a bit far-fetched, you know, because why would there be suddenly 1,000 angels, you know, be a reception committee? And when I thought about it, I simply felt, you know, I had the music and everything, the choir, everything. I simply felt that I created with my attention or with my feelings, which were all rolled into place at that time, I created a focal point of attraction where I called these voices up from a universal database and the angels, and I manifested them. But I could be wrong, but this is, to me, you know, that's how I sort of envisage it, especially when you think where you are, what this space of consciousness is, which is literally infinite.
Fascinating. And really, we're talking around this central issue that I want to try and approach from a different angle here for a second. And first, let me back up and say, I my only experience with this whole extended consciousness thing was I interviewed a gentleman who is an out-of-body experiencer and had a similar experience to yourself, and that his name is Graham Nichols. And Graham was very intent on achieving an out-of-body experience because he read about it and he said, this is something that's possible. I want to do it, which is a little bit different than you. You were just meditating and spontaneously achieved it. He said, no, I want to do it. So he just intensely focused on this meditation technique, and he really probably went through, you know, more than 99.9% of people would in terms of his diligence and his effort in doing it. And then he did achieve. He left his body. And then, as you describe, it took him several years to refine it and refine it further and further and further. You know, so I talked to Graham and I said, okay, I'd like to try it with you. You know, you teach people how to do it, teach me how to do it. And the way we started was I really don't have any kind of paranormal experiences in my background, but I have these very vivid dreams. So he said, we should start with the dreaming. And lo and behold, after working with him and talking to another friend of mine through the show, Dr. Andy Paquette, who is fabulous, has a fabulous history of precognitive dreams and spiritual dreams, I was able to develop a little bit of an ability to lucid dream. And I still do that to this day, and it's rather interesting. But the one thing I discovered in my lucid dreaming that totally fits with your experience is I then discovered that really all my dreams are lucid dreams. It's a matter of memory and perspective, and that I was constantly creating this dream and creating this reality.
Yes.
So I find that to be consistent with my experience. But there's another aspect of this that I think is the part that really intrigues people and doesn't fit, I think, necessarily into that model. And that would be, like I just said, Ian's encounter with Jesus. But I'll take it in another direction. And a while back, I had an interview with Robert Bruce. This was episode 203 of Skeptico. Probably one of the best-known out-of-body experiencers in the world, wrote this book, Astral Dynamics, which was hugely successful, and many, many people have read it. So Robert's account is of demonic possession, that he was doing a healing, he encountered a demon, that demon possessed him in this world, and he battled this demon in this world and this extended consciousness realm, and this demon was sent off. And he says that he's had similar encounters with these kind of other spirits in this other realm. Now, this is the kind of issue I think that people are trying to fit into this framework that you're laying out there. Because on one hand, we can say there's this field of infinite consciousness that we are creating our reality out of. But there's another reality that's very primal to people that is, oh, I encountered Jesus, or I encountered Buddha, or I encountered Krishna, and that's been the guiding force of their whole life. Or people are encountering, like Robert Bruce did, these demonic beings or evil spirits. So how do we sort this out? I don't know that we can just blow by it and go, oh, well, you know, there's just this consciousness field and it's created out of there. I don't know if that really hits people's experience.
Yeah, I think we have the moment we are born, we are sort of endowed with some sort of genetic program or cultural program, you know, and that determines the experiences we look for and we find and so on, our education, our upbringing and so on. And, you know, that takes us into a certain direction in our life and endows us with a certain type of belief. And it is this program which makes us focus our attention into distinct directions. For example, if we had a very strongly Christian upbringing, we may well focus our attention into this aspect of the universe, of the infinite universe, which is endowed with Christian paraphernalia, environments, churches, belief systems, holy entities, and so on. And we may well with our strong focus and passion, we may well draw essences of these entities into our awareness. And by the mere focus of doing so, we may actually get a part or the essence of these historic beings, bring them into our reality, and they may actually act authentically, you know, the way we would expect them to act. You know, I mean, this is just a theory. The same thing may happen if we focus on negative aspects of our personality. And, you know, if we confront our shadow, you know, we may draw aspects of our subconscious into our reality. And then suddenly these projections become ensouled by negative energies, you know, which may use them as a vehicle in order to interact with us. These are all sort of concepts which, when you consider that the consciousness is a very pliable, very infinite, and very flexible state, completely different to what we experience on a physical level, you know, then you can easily explain how so many different phenomena can take place and take on so many forms and shapes. I mean, the way I express it in my book is the difference between life on the physical level and life, non-physical life, is that the moment our physical body with our physical brain dies, we are left with our subconscious and all the information which have, you know, defined us. And then suddenly all this becomes our external new reality, you know. And it's a bit like in a dream. You have a dream, you're no longer a physical entity, and suddenly the dream becomes your reality. The only difference is with lucid dreaming and out-of-body experiences, it becomes a tangible, hard, solid, external reality. But in addition to this, it is also infinitely infinitely complex.
I hear you on all that, Jürgen, but I just have to say, you know, maybe. I guess this is really the crux of the debate or the divide. So Robert Bruce is saying, I didn't just form this out of a thought form. I was interacting with another individual here, and there was this third entity that was this spirit entity that was interacting with both of us, you know. And I had a similar experience. I interviewed this woman, Marilyn Hughes, who I thought was really interesting because we not only, she's an out-of-body traveler, that's what she reports, similar to you, but we actually did an experiment because this was during a time when I was investigating medium communication. And we did a somewhat of a demonstration, I should say, rather than an experiment. But it was controlled, and I thought she did a very convincing job of accessing this other realm of deceased people and assisting this woman who lived in Texas whose daughter had committed suicide. And she was able to go, this is her report, she's able to go to find the daughter and bring back information that was extremely significant to the mother, who was completely blinded from the reading. I was in the middle, so she didn't have any way of knowing any of this stuff. But I mean, if we're going to say, you know, where's the proof? Marilyn Hughes provided proof to me that she had gone to some other realm, accessed some other spirit being, that being this deceased daughter, and then bringing back that information, transferring it to me, and me giving it to the mother. So I always wonder when I hear your talk and your work, which I find very fascinating and important in so many ways, but I wonder if we're kind of missing the point when we talk about this huge field of consciousness and we're creating all these islands of our consensus reality. I mean, maybe we're really missing the point. That's what Marilyn would say. Marilyn would say the point is that there are these beings out there on these other levels. So are they important, or are they just being created by us and they're not important?
No, absolutely. She is absolutely right, because these are tangible realities made out of individuals. The only difference is that these people have given up the physical body and now they are living in an other dimensional reality. And I have met fairly sinister people myself, perhaps perhaps similar to what Robert Bruce may have described. You know, they are basically people on much lower dimensional level with a very negative atmosphere and persona. But my experiences were probably different. But one thing I can confirm is over the years I have met my mother, who died in 1997. I met her on several occasions, and I've re-met her, and I had conversations with her, and I watched how she progressed and developed. And I had conversations with my wife's brother, who died in 2006, and I met him again. And we discussed at great lengths what, you know, where his life was, where it has gone wrong, and so on. And I could even confirm afterwards with my wife, and I gave her some details that I couldn't have known, which she confirmed. So I'm absolutely convinced that there is no such thing as death or disappearance of individual people once we are stripped of our physical body. I would even go so far, it is what we experience here on the physical level is only a sort of a tiny percentage of the greater reality which we enter into once we leave our physical body behind, you know. So I think what I'm saying is not in contradiction to what you've just mentioned, Alex.
Great. So now then let's tackle some of the really, really big questions. Destiny or free will? Are we, as you said, programmed at birth, or as many others have suggested from the reincarnation experience, before birth or through a period of many births? Are we playing out a destiny in our life, or are we shaping our destiny as we go, or both?
Yes, I think it's a bit of both, really. I mean, we are sort of programmed by, you know, our experiences, our past experience, our environments and parents, in order to act in a certain manner. But on the other hand, we also have got a free will. And I'm personally not 100% convinced that we are totally enslaved to karma or to a past program, you know. I mean, for example, this becomes very apparent when you go into the deeper states of meditation, and then you get to a point where you experience something which I would call liberation, you know, freedom, where you suddenly find all the things you have believed in before or have adhered to or were compelled by, these things are suddenly no longer relevant, or they don't have any power over you. You know, you suddenly find you're in a state of liberation and can actually make, within limits, within the physical world, of course, you know, but you can call the shots and you can act free of your past program. That is my experience. So I would say, yes, there's a bit of both, you know, and unless you find this point of where you lose your personal identification, you know, your attachments to your old identification, you need to go past this point, and then you simultaneously also move into much higher reality dimensions, you know, which are increasingly more liberating and more luminous and more beautiful.
You know, Jürgen, you just mentioned again, and we've mentioned throughout this interview, higher levels, and it suggests a hierarchy. And many have reported such a hierarchy, ascended masters, like we're talking about Buddha, Jesus, Krishna, advanced spirits. Does this suggest a hierarchy? Does this suggest a moral imperative? Are we driven in by some evolutionary force in a direction, be it towards good, or if we want to put it in those terms, or some other way? Is there God, I guess, is the question.
Mm. Well, I mean, the idea of a hierarchy is perhaps not the best way of expressing it, because, I mean, very often I came across before I had my out-of-body experience, I was told there are 7 levels of the astral plane, so and so many of the mental plane. And very early on in the beginning, I was on out of my body, and I met people who actually were permanent inhabitants there. And one of the stupid questions I asked was, what level am I on? You know, and of course they looked at me as if I, you know, as if I was mad, because they didn't know what I was talking about. So we create abstraction from actual experiences in consciousness in order to make it understandable. But I think there's no such thing as hierarchies which you can define in a numeric system. You know, when I talk about higher states of consciousness, I mean more awareness, more light, more power, more energy, you know, this sort of thing. More the consciousness is more expanded, more inclusive, and also a higher consciousness to me means you are closer to the source level of who you are. So there's a feeling that you feel at home, you know, and this home feeling to me is the best way to describe how close I am to the source consciousness. And the further I am removed from the source consciousness, the more alienated I feel, you know, until I get back to the physical level. On the physical level, most people who live here are leading fairly alienated lives, you know. But when you transcend the boundaries of the physical world, you become closer to the unity awareness, to the source level, and you don't feel this alienation. And when you come to higher dimensional levels, you simply can transpose your identity to anything, any object you look at, and you can feel the water, you can be the water, you know, if you look at water or the flower. Alienation is totally transcended, and you become consciousness. And then the limits are only dependent on how far you are able to expand your consciousness, you know. And that's my experience, that lower down, if you like to use this description, you become more and more estranged from your source level and more alienated, you know, until you're in the physical level, and suddenly you are in an outside world. You live in an outside world where you distinguish between you and the others, or yourself and anotherness. And this is transcended when you turn your attention inside.
I kind of get that, but I want to push this a little bit further, because I think we have this problem in crossing in merging these realities that you're talking about. I mean, when you mention the term source and getting closer to the source, and you're speaking in terms that many religious and spiritual people would immediately identify with and label that as God, and you carefully don't do that. And you also then talk about alienation and moving away from that. And again, these can easily be put in terms that are very familiar with a lot of wisdom traditions, a lot of religion. So is there a reality to the concept of God?
Well, that's one thing, really, which I this is a subject I simply feel I'm not authorized or qualified to say something about. I can only talk about my experience. And very early on in the 70s, I had a unity experience which came spontaneous, which I described in my first book, after I spent months and months of meditation, sort of 5 hours a day. And then I stopped meditating because it didn't get me anywhere, and I decided I wanted to give all this thing up for good. But then out of the blue, I suddenly had a experience where I was having a mug of coffee and a sandwich, and suddenly I noticed that neither of these objects belonged to me. And then I noticed that even my hands didn't belong to me. There was some otherness which was holding this thing. And this went on and on and on until I suddenly totally became disembodied and depersonalized. And I was suddenly entered an luminous light, which I think many people would properly describe it as a uniting with God or something. There was an all-present, all-omnipresent awareness. There was no separation between myself. There was just pure consciousness. And this this had a very, very powerful effect on me and has never left me. But I'm finding that by giving it a name, I would actually limit it.
Sure.
You know? And so it always became a little bit of something which I dared not name or define in any way because it was so incredibly infinite. And I came across this type of consciousness. I experienced this several times after that. And most recently, the most powerful experience I had was in 2013, when I was on a retreat in the Scottish mountains for a week, and I meditated all day long. And I documented this as well in my book, The 10-Minute Moment. And there came a point on day five where I suddenly was confronted with the total dissolution of myself, of my identity, of my ego, of any sense of self. And I became very scared. I thought the next thing that will happen is I cease to exist. And the only thing that can now happen is that there is a God and it will absolutely dissolve me. I will lose any sense of identity. And I became very desperate to find my identity again, my ego. And it took me all day to assemble my sense of focus of who I was. But then something interesting happened the following day after I sort of got over this, which I thought was a traumatic experience. The following day, something very beautifully and magically happened. I suddenly was meditating, and I was sitting outside my little hut and was looking into the landscape, and suddenly this light descended on the environment, the grass, and everything started glowing. My first impression was, okay, that is the sunlight which is reflecting. But then I noticed the light was everywhere. I literally could see all the atoms. And then this light sort of came into my own being, and I suddenly again lost the distinction between who I was and an infinite luminous awareness. And that was the most powerful thing. I couldn't even describe what was taking place. It didn't last long, but that totally eradicated my idea of who I was. And even now, to this day, I'm finding it very hard to even remember who I was just a couple of days ago, if you like, you know, because the sense of otherness since then, which is now 3 years ago, has totally disappeared. You know, I find when I walk around into town, it feels as if I'm walking in an extension of my living room. Mm-hmm. There's no outside world anymore, you know. And that's the closest I can describe this state of consciousness, you know, which is sort of waiting for us to be experienced. Because my powerful feeling is that is at the root of who we really are. And from this state of consciousness, we really only just start to become human beings, you know, and then develop where we are not focused on a separated self. And that was a very powerful experience. Now, I don't know what to say about this, how to describe it. I don't know where God comes into it, you know.
No, I think you've done an excellent job of kind of traversing that terrain. And I like the idea that this is not knowable, and it's almost, you get the sense that it's almost not something that you can, should even try and verbalize or bring to that level, because it would somehow be lost. You know, it's interesting that, like, I know in the Muslim tradition, Islam, they have that, that there is that edict, right, to never mention the name God. It's never supposed to be spoken or written. I might have that a little bit off, but the basic idea is the same, is that, you know, to try and bring it down to that level would somehow lessen its meaning or its significance, or take us in a different direction than where it goes. So, but here I guess is where that leaves me. And I love what you just brought forth. And I think it's so important that people know that you've walked this path and that you report it so honestly and in such detail with your website and all these terrific books that you've mentioned. And I also think of my friend Rick Archer at Boot at the Gas Pump, who's done an excellent job of chronicling similar accounts from people who are going through this process of enlightenment or awareness, whatever you want, whatever label you want to put on it. And there's so many, many people who've experienced it in different ways, unique ways, but in many ways, there's similarities that are undeniable. I guess the question I'm always left with is, then what are we to make of the reason why we're here? It doesn't seem adequate to say we're here only to transcend being here. We're here only to get beyond being here. I that just doesn't fit with my understanding of, for example, reincarnation. My understanding of, and again, reincarnation from a scientific standpoint, well established in the research. We've interviewed Jim Tucker from the University of Virginia. There's been a lot of research on that. The research stands up. So reincarnation is kind of hard to step away from in a very reality-based kind of sense. But when we look at it from a larger sense, how are we supposed to understand what our purpose is here? It doesn't seem adequate to say we're here only to transcend being here.
Well, this is exactly what I feel. I mean, this is why I sort of depart with the idea that we are here in order to transcend our state we are at the moment, and then sort of escape from it and become enlightened being, to be in some celestial dimension and be relieved of all the hassle and all the pain. You know, that is not how I see it. I mean, my understanding is exactly, we are here because we are here. You know, we are a part of this reality. To me, that is absolutely fine. And if we experience hardship and all the other things, the best thing we can do is to bring a higher state of awareness into this reality and make it illuminated in a sense, so that we don't feel the extremes of suffering we do normally. I mean, we still suffer by the mere fact that we are physical beings endowed with a physical body and hence with pain, but we are not associated any longer with this limited shell which we carry around. And I think that is the next stage in our evolution, if you like, as human beings, that we are able to use the energy forms we carry around with it, but from an enlightened or luminous viewpoint, you know. So it's nothing really I feel that we need to get away from. Quite the opposite. We have to, we are here to embrace it properly with the greatest level of consciousness and awareness, you know, and penetrate everything we are surrounded by, to enter reality wholeheartedly, not getting away from it. And I think that makes our life and our reality incredibly rich and multifaceted. And it gives us much more energy to bring into this world and transform all the shortfalls we have created because of our ignorance, you know, and our alienation. And that's how I see it.
Wonderfully said. I think that makes total sense to me. Jürgen, tell us where you're going with this work now. Where is this taking you in terms of interacting with other people? How can people learn about what you're doing? We already said through the website, and we'll have links to that in the books. But how are you also engaging with people about what you've discovered?
Well, what I'm doing at the moment, I mean, I'm basically an artist. I'm a commercial illustrator, and I've been an artist all my life. I earn my living as an artist. And I mean, there are two things I pursue. One is meditation. And I didn't know until about a couple of years ago that I was going to write another book, you know, which is Vistas of Infinity, which are the last 7 years since the first book came out. I don't know whether that I will continue this, but I can tell you now that what I experience at the moment through deep meditation gives me another new level of deeper experience. And I feel there is no such thing as arriving at a stage. I always feel wherever I am, I'm just at the bottom step of an infinite long ladder, you know. So I don't know what's going to happen in the next sort of 7 years, but in the meantime, I'm going to carry on with my deep meditation, and I already found there are levels which I experience, which I haven't experienced before, which may take me into a totally different direction. The other thing I'm really interested in is, as in my work as an artist, I'm just getting involved in virtual reality, and I'm trying to bring some of the archetypes into the physical reality. For example, one of the deep meditative experience is a tunnel experience. And if you go through higher levels of consciousness, you get incredibly vivid tunnel experience, which are captured by other cultures in forms of mandalas, you know, and the Jungian idea of the self and so on. Mm-hmm. And what I've done, I already released a couple of virtual reality applications, and the idea is that people actually make a link, or it triggers a deep inner memory which they may recognize, and it connects them to their inner self. And the feedback I had so far is quite promising. Some people described it is similar how they would experience a near-death experience, for example. Other people mentioned words like nirvana, or, you know, so that is quite promising. I've got a bit of feedback from that. The thing is, of course, with virtual reality, you are immersed, you're surrounded by the experience. So the possibility of releasing a trigger to your subconscious is much greater. So that's the work I'm feeling quite excited about. And also it allows me to, instead of having flood 3D images, which I have on my website, it allows me to use the inspiration of what I gained through my out-of-body experience to create 3D environments people can enter into, and perhaps also create triggers, which then, when people fall asleep or they go to sleep at night, in their dream, they may suddenly be reminded, and they may find a lucid trigger in their dream. And this is a work that really interests me, combining my artistic sort of leaning to create a connection within people to trigger lucid experiences.
That's awesome. So how does this actually work? I mean, is it something, it's an app that people download? Where do they run it on?
Yes, I mean, at the moment I'm using the development version of the Oculus Rift, which is going to be released next year as a consumer version. When this comes out, I will make these apps freely available, so people can just go to my website and download them and try it out. I want as many people as possible to have the possibility of linking up to this experience, the same way as some time ago I composed a binaural sound, which includes the mantra and also a shamanic beat, and I had a lot of positive experiences, feedback from other people who felt that it helped their meditation and so on. So I want to create an armory of apps and aids, similar to what people already do when they write books about meditation and so. But I want to do the same thing in the audiovisual field, you know. And I've linked up with a composer who does music, which is based on mantras and certain rhythms and esoteric chants and Sanskrit chants. And these go very well together. He's also been meditating for 40 years, and his name is Craig Pruess. And we hope to work together and make these applications freely available so people can try them out and see if they find another entry point into higher consciousness.
Awesome. And the best place for people to find all this is through your website, Multidimensional Man, or is there another place?
Yes, there's a link for Multidimensional Man, but my other website is also lightandmagic.co.uk.
Great. Lightandmagic.co.uk. Great. Well, it is a tremendous body of work. You're making a great contribution. It's been great talking to you. I appreciate the openness and your ability to handle all these different issues that lie beneath the kind of surface of just, oh, it's either true or it's not true. You know, I mean, diving deeper is, I think, where so many of the more interesting aspects of this really emerge, and you do a great job of that, so I appreciate it.
Yeah, I think we are just at the beginning, really. I always feel whenever I enter these states, how much we are at the very beginning, you know, and how little we actually know. And I hope that gradually we build up a consensus by gathering a lot more data, you know, and people making all kinds of contributions. There are experiences people publish I have no idea of, you know, and I have no knowledge of. So it will help if each one of us creates another piece to put into the puzzle. And hopefully it is a consensus which will allow us to build up a picture of the frontiers, which really haven't been explored until only a few years ago. So we are just at the beginning of something totally new and totally unexplored. And I think if we need to make a start somehow, you know, and I'm hoping.
I like the way you put that. I'm always a little bit resistant to the consciousness revolution thing that so many people point to and paradigm shift and all that. I see it much more like in the way that you're talking about is that, hey, it's always evolving. It's always reshaping. And as we build these different islands by forming these consensus realities, of course, different people are jumping on that island and jumping off another island. And we don't have to be too attached to where it all goes. We just have to follow the next right thing to do, and I think everything takes care of itself.
Yes.
Well, it's been great. It's been great having you on, Jürgen, and please let's stay in touch and let us know when you make some major advancements with these apps, and we'll certainly get the word out as best we can.
Thanks, Alex. Thanks.
Thanks again to Jürgen Ziva for joining me today on Skeptico. I have one question to tee up from this interview, and that is, what do you make of Jürgen Ziva? What do you think of his accounts of this extended consciousness realm? How do they compare and contrast with some of the other folks you've heard here on Skeptico? And while we're at it, how are we ever to get our arms around all this material when there are these conflicting and different accounts? I think Jürgen has a very open-minded way of including all those as aspects of a possibility of a much, much greater consciousness. But what do you think about that? The place to let me know is through the Skeptico website at skeptiko.com. You can join the discussion at the forum with a couple of the new links I added to the website per your suggestion, or you can drop me a note on Facebook or through email. Of course, you'll also find on the Skeptical website almost 300 episodes of Skeptical, all there for download for free. You can subscribe, and I hope you do, through iTunes or Stitcher, or you can just download the shows right there through the website. Thanks again to all of you who have connected with me in the last couple weeks. I've really enjoyed the emails and the kind words that you're sending my way. It's so awesome to think that we've been able to connect through this show. It really is such an awesome, awesome experience to know that we've made this connection through this strange medium of sending out these recorded shows through the internet. So, so cool. Who would have thought it? Anyway, I have a number of interesting shows coming up. I will roll them out during the holiday season, probably on the regular schedule, maybe slow down a little bit, but they're coming your way. So clear up the space on the hard drive or iPhone or wherever you're listening. And until next time, do take care and bye for now.